This is episode 46 of Tegan Goes Vegan. I'm your host, Tegan Karuna. This week, I have fellow vegan podcaster Andy Tabar on the show. I caught him while he was here in Philly for a quick trip, and we had a really fantastic conversation. We talked about the journey that he took to starting Compassion Company, which is a great vegan apparel company that if you've ever been to a veg fest anywhere in the United States, maybe Canada, I don't know. Maybe, I don't think we mentioned Canada. If you've ever been to a veg fest in the US, you've probably seen his booth. And if you pay attention to vegan clothing at all, you've almost certainly seen his shirts and other things that he makes. We talk a lot about like what Andy did in terms of advocacy early on in being vegan, and then also what it was like when he made vegan advocacy, or what it is like now that he's made vegan advocacy his full-time job. He was on the 10 Billion Lives tour, where he had more than 10,000 conversations with people about why they should become vegan. And from that experience, he learned a lot about how to talk to people about something that not everybody is really ready to talk about yet. So we have a great conversation about like how to be a good advocate and how to talk to people in a way that gets them to listen to you, which is really important. We also talk about what it's been like since leaving the 10 Billion Lives tour and what it means to own a vegan business and kind of be a nomad and go around the country driving from veg fest to veg fest, selling your wares and talking to people about vegan issues every day and how great it is to be engaged constantly with a community of people who are at least open to the idea of being vegan. I had a great time talking with Andy, and it was such a joy to have him in the studio. So I'm really excited to share this interview with you. Quick note before we get started. As always, you can find the show at TeganGoesVegan.com and on Facebook at Facebook.com/TeganGoesVeganPodcast. The show has a new feed on iTunes, so all of the old ratings and reviews are gone. There's nothing there right now. If you have a second, if you could hop on over to iTunes, make a quick review or a rating, that would be great. It helps other people find the show. It shows other people that you appreciate the quality of content that I provide through the podcast. So I will be forever in your debt if you give it a quick rating. As always, if you have any questions or comments, you can email me at mail@TeganGoesVegan.com. All right, let's get right to it. Here he is, Andy Tabar. So, Andy, when did you become vegan?
I became vegan just over 9 years ago.
And how did that come about? Because you're not 9 years old.
Yes.
So, you weren't always vegan.
Yes, I'm currently 33 years old. I wish I was taking notes when that all happened, because I don't remember any big light bulb moment. I don't remember the, oh my, I saw this video and I need to do this thing. But I think the first time I remember hearing about it or thinking about it was I had a persuasive speech class in college or a speech class. And that one of the assignments was a persuasive speech. And I was like, let me do this on why you should go vegan. And I don't know why I chose that. I was not vegan or vegetarian, but I just like did the research, and that kind of had me, and I gave this speech and people were like, oh my God, like, but what do you do about B12? And I was like, I have no idea. I'm not vegan. And so that kind of got the gears turning. I tried to be vegetarian. It just didn't stick. And I just stopped and went back to my horrible, you know, quad stacker from Burger King meat eating ways. And then I was in a band and we were touring. And for some reason, half the band was like, we should go vegetarian. And I don't remember thinking like that's like for the animals. It was just like, this is the good, if you're a good person, you're supposed to do this. This is the good thing to do. And we kind of like made this roadmap because we were in Connecticut and we're about to do kind of a clockwise, you know, sweep of the U.S. And we're like, well, we can't do it in Florida because Meemaw's Alaskan Tacos has those gator tacos we like. And there's this burger place in Texas and In-N-Out in California. But we never toured north of Southern California. So when we leave, we won't know what we're missing. And let's just go vegetarian. And we were in Southern California at a burrito place. Veggie burrito is the cheapest. And we were all, the three of us, there was six of us total. But the three of us were like, we want to do it now. Sure. Okay. And like never look back. It wasn't a struggle. Like I have no idea why it was just so easy to do. And then, you know, we're driving up the five and see all these cows on the side of the road. And I was like, I feel so great because I'm not contributing to that anymore. Little did I know, most of those were like dairy cows,
right?
And still contributing. And then we toured with a band where all the members were vegan, and they were the first nice vegans I ever met. All my previous experience with vegans were in like the hardcore scene and like kind of militant and like kind of judgy. And these vegans that we toured with were like super nice, and they would let me try their horrible cream cheese, and I would make fun of it, and they wouldn't give me a hard time, and they would show me how to make ramen, but with like peanut butter and sriracha to make a spicy Thai noodle thing. And so they kind of, I think, really laid the groundworks for like finally going vegan. And I did probably about 6 months after that tour. So that's kind of my long, drawn out, slow process of going vegan.
And I mean, it's not that long of a process. Like, you did a speech, and then you became vegetarian, and then 6 months later, you were vegan. I mean, maybe there was, like, more time between this the speech and the band tour.
Yeah, that was several years. But between going vegetarian and vegan was, I think, 8 months. And then from touring with that band, it was 6 months after that, around that point. And I was like secretly vegan at first. Like, I bought a vegan cookbook and I was making stuff, but I didn't want to tell anyone because I didn't want them to judge me. I didn't want them to ask questions. And then one of our band members went vegan before me, and he kind of was observing. He was like, seems like you're vegan now. And I was like, yeah, okay, I guess I am. And it was the same thing. Like, okay, I'm vegan. And just like, now here I am 9 or so years later.
Yeah. I mean, that's a cool story. I love the two parts of that story are really funny to me. One is the fact that like a non-vegan kid would give like an impassioned speech about going vegan and then not do anything about it. Like, how old were you? Like, where was this in your life?
I was probably 19 or 20.
Yeah, that seems like something a 19 or 20 year old would do. Like, get really invested in an idea, get like all of the evidence, everything they need, and then like drive immediately to Burger King afterward. It's just like the teenageriest thing.
And I remember doing the speech and doing the research, and I was like, wow, there's not really good reason to not do this. Right. You know, like, why would anybody not do this? But then there, I just kept on doing it. And I guess now that we're actually talking it out, it was about 7 years between giving that speech and actually going vegetarian, or maybe 6 years. So it's that was a long time.
I mean, that's kind of what I think a lot of people do, but like I can't think of the word right now, like distinct of a time period. Like a lot of people know information about what it really means to consume animal products, and they choose to ignore it anyway. And you just did that like in a hyper-focused way of like really researching like the argument for being vegan and then discarding it entirely.
Yeah.
But it also apparently like planted the seeds for you to become vegan eventually. Like,
I think so, yeah.
It didn't go, it wasn't like you totally forgot. It was just like the cognitive dissonance that you'd had like your whole life was just still in effect.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That's cool. And then I frankly love the idea of like, okay, so we have to hit up these restaurants, and when we get to Southern California, then we're going to be vegetarian because we can't miss the gator tacos. As a Floridian, I would like to state for the record that people don't eat alligator in Florida. Like, that's not something that we do on a regular basis. That's a tourist thing for sure.
Yeah.
But I do love that idea of like just like waiting for the right moment. If that's after you've had like certain experiences, or just like giving yourself the time to like think it through or whatever it was, like, I think that that's a really like funny and very relatable part of the story of like wanting to do a couple last things before cutting out meat.
I feel like people do this all the time when you kind of delay and you're like, okay, well, on Monday I'm starting this diet, or on Monday I'm going to start saving money, but this weekend I'm going to go all out and do the thing. And that was just like a really extended version of that, I guess.
And, you know, you're touring and you're probably just like scrounging up food wherever you can. So having those like couple like food goal places makes a lot of sense, that would like fit into the touring lifestyle.
Absolutely.
A lot. Yeah. So you became vegan. And then what did you do? Like, did you immediately jump right into advocacy? Did you kind of like you were secret vegan for a while, which I think a lot of people do. I was like, I'm only vegan for 30 days mm-hmm. at first because I wasn't sure like how it was going to go. So I didn't want to like make a big deal about it.
Yeah.
You know, what was like the next step for you?
I didn't jump into any like big advocacy for a while. I did start just researching as much as I possibly could. I read every book I could. I watched every documentary I could. Not that there was a ton out at that point. And I just wanted to like educate myself. And so then that kind of turned me into the preachy vegan. So, like sort of, but not really. It's not like really my style, but I feel like I was a bit more pushy about it back then. And
what did that look like? Like the pushiness?
I guess it was less pushy and more judgy and more just like wanting to jump on every argument that someone started. Like if they like said something and then you're like, I have to correct this person. I must be right now. I need them to know how wrong this person is.
You are like wagging like a single finger up in the air so everybody knows just how right he was.
I actually typed with one angry single finger as I was on the internet. And yeah, and you know, you'd say your point and you're like, I got them. And then they don't respond. And you're like, I demand a response from you. Like, you need to admit that you were wrong. Like, that was the kind of person that I was. Not like all the time, but I felt like I was like, this is the way you convince people that this is the right thing, is to show them how wrong they are and make them feel bad about how wrong they are.
Did that work?
No.
Really?
I mean, I have a lot of friends. At that point, one band member was vegan, and the band that we toured with were kind of some distant vegan friends. I didn't really have any vegans in my life. And like over the years, a ton of my friends have gone vegan. And I'm not like claiming credit for all of that. But there's, of course, something to be said for having that vegan presence and some, not even like role model, but just sort of like lead by example type thing. And I was in a band and I was the lead vocalist. So I was writing the lyrics and I kind of wanted to talk about it. But since the whole band wasn't vegan, I didn't feel like I could really represent it. But I started writing songs about like animal testing, and I feel like that's something, it's kind of like a fur thing where like, even if you're not vegan, you're probably against fur, like right. Most people are, and things of that nature I would start to write about. And I would talk a little bit about that kind of stuff on stage. I started making baked goods and chili and bringing those to shows and like selling them for just like $1 for like a big cookie or something, or like $2 for a bowl of chili and some cornbread. And I'd have some like little vegan information pamphlets. And the chili I'd actually make in a rice cooker, because that's what the band started doing on tour, because we would be going to like Taco Bell. And, you know, this is like the thing where like, okay, everyone gets like $5 a day for food, and you go to Taco Bell, you can get a lot of food for a couple bucks, but we're like, we need a push our budget down even more. So we got this big like 30 cup rice cooker, and we just started making chili in it, or we'd make rice and beans, because you could just use it to heat up anything,
right?
And we realized we could feed everybody. You know, we'd have like 6, 7, 8 people touring with us, and feed the sound guy and the promoter, and everyone likes you and everyone gets seconds,
right?
And it's like, okay, we get to the venue, everyone's loading in, and I am food guy, so I set up the merch, and then I plug in the rice cooker and I start making food just right there at the merch table. And so I started doing that at shows, because it would also show people it's so easy to make. Like, you're almost doing like a cooking demo,
right,
while people are there.
You can like literally eat vegan food right out of the rice cooker. Like, that's how you are a person who is on tour and you can do it.
Absolutely.
Anybody can do it.
Yeah. So I wrote a zine about that, like just a little photocopied thing. It had like 5 or 6 recipes in it, and I would just give that out to a lot of my friends' bands, or people could buy it for a buck or something. So that was kind of my early vegan advocacy. A friend invited me to speak at a local library, and so I put together like an hour-long presentation and made food for everybody, and those were kind of the early things. And then like somewhere in there, I started Compassion Company, vegan clothing line, which was very much like a hobby for a while. But while that was sort of in its infancy, I got a position touring with the 10 Billion Lives Tour, which is a project of Farm. And we do pay-per-view activism. You pay people $1 to watch a 4-minute video about the treatment of animals on farms. I've said that a million times
in
my life. And so I did that for like a couple of years, like off and on. And that kind of led me into where I am now and sort of my later stage veganism.
So what was the 10 Billion Lives Tour like? Like, what was that? What's the central goal of that? Is it still running?
It is.
Okay, I thought so. Like, what's its goal? And then what was your personal experience like talking to that many people and showing them such a powerful video?
So, 10 Million Lives Tour is put on by FARM, Farm Animal Rights Movement, which is one of the oldest, at least in the U.S., animal rights organizations. And their sort of explicitly stated goal is to end the use of animals for food. So the video just kind of falls in line with that. And what the tour was at this point, it's expanded now, but at that point in its kind of early days, it was me and one other person on tour in this vehicle that kind of looked like a food truck. And we lived inside of it. Very bare bones, like, accommodations. And on the outside, there were awnings that would go up and a bunch of TV screens and headphones, and people could come up and watch it in groups of, you know, between one and four people. So it was a really wild experience for me, because at that point in my life, I was like, I just want to talk to everybody I can about veganism. And I love to tour and travel. So this is my two passions put together. And over the course of all the tours I did, I think it was calculated that I probably had about 10,000 individual conversations.
Wow.
Some one-on-one, some you're like one-on-10, you have a bunch of people. So some a little less meaningful than others. But it definitely taught me a lot about how to talk to people, how to, probably way more importantly, how to listen to people. And it also got me talking to people that weren't just within my kind of bubble and my demographic. And I did we did a lot in like Texas and a lot of like the southern states, where at first they're kind of like wary to send us because there's this stereotype of like, well, I'm from Texas and I just eat meat all day long. Right. And but because of that, I talked to people that were like representatives for Chick-fil-A. I talked to someone that was on like the Cattlemen's Association that was pushing for ag gag laws. I talked to people who are experiencing homelessness that used to work for Tyson, just like, you know, and a ton of college students as well. But like, just because you're hitting so many places, you start to have these really interesting conversations with people who are super opposed to what you're doing or kind of on board, or, you know, so it sort of gave me an appreciation for figuring out which avenues to take when you're talking to somebody.
Were there any conversations in particular that like still stick with you as being informative for your own viewpoints and your own advocacy efforts?
You know, this isn't one that I actually had, but kind of witnessed having, which was, so the video plays, everybody puts in a name and an email before they watch. And at the end, there's a pledge. And it's like, will you help end this cruelty? I pledge to eat animal-free meals this many days a week, you know, 0 through 7, people can choose. And then they come talk to someone from the tour and they'll debrief them, give them their dollar, ask them about what they saw and try and get a conversation going. And I would always keep an eye on what people pledged, because that would tell me what kind of conversation I was about to have and what approach to take. And this person came up to the truck and was like, what's this about? And we're like, oh, it's about the treatment of animals on farms. And he's like, okay, I'll watch it, but you're not going to change my mind. Like, I love meat, whatever. And I'm like, okay. And while that was happening, my tour assistant she had like run to the bathroom, and she came back right as that guy finished. He pressed 0 and she grabbed a leaflet and jumped right into the conversation, not knowing everything that had come before it.
Right.
And if I had had that conversation, I probably would have written it off, but she didn't really know what to expect. And she just went into it and she ended up having a long, very meaningful conversation. So that always stuck with me, because it showed to have zero expectations with people, or to expect that people will want to do good when given the opportunity. That's always a lesson that has stuck with me more so than almost any other conversation on that tour, was witnessing that happen.
Do you know if he changed his mind at all?
He did. He was like, oh, you know, this actually makes a lot of sense. And I don't think he, if I remember correctly, I don't think he was like, I'm going to go vegan right now. But he's like, I could give this a shot. And he took, we had our leaflet with like the basic info and the dollar. And for people that we had really good conversations with, we also had the big like vegan eating guides. And we would give those to some people. And he took one of those as well. So
you definitely planted a seed there too. Like, that's the kind of conversation that a couple years from then maybe is going to be, you know, who knows? He could be like a huge vegan advocate now and we like don't even know that it's him.
It's entirely possible.
It's always, I mean, I think about what I was like before I was vegan, and it was definitely not vegan. So like everybody was not vegan at some point.
Yeah. I always would think about how would I react to this if I walked by this tour before I was vegan. Like probably I would have just been like, oh, I'm busy. No, thank you.
Oh, definitely.
But I don't know. I feel like I might have just been, I don't want to say like a jerk, but I feel like I wouldn't have been receptive to it, or, but I never know. You never know. But I try and keep that in mind.
It's, you know, like in my work, in my like day job work in communications, like a lot of what we talk about is like who your audience is and like what you can say to them that will help them understand whatever it is you're trying to get them to understand. You know, for my work, it's health policy. It's like not advocacy at all. So it's much drier stuff. But when it comes to talking to people about vegan issues or just animal use issues, you really, it makes a lot of sense as the person who's trying to get somebody to think about it, to think about what that person is going to be interested in. And the people who go to a truck like that clearly have some kind of interest. Mm-hmm. So like you already have that like knowledge of them and what they want and what they're interested in. So like that's an like a really cool way, even though like someone like me and maybe you would not necessarily have approached the truck.
Yeah.
All those people, 10,000 people did, that you talk to. And that's such like a cool way to like think about how advocacy works.
Absolutely.
And yeah, I mean, to be able to say 10,000 conversations, like that's gotta really feel like you've accomplished something tangible.
Yeah, it was definitely kind of looking back at the end of each tour and you're like, okay, we did, you know, we had this many views and there's two of us on tour and some volunteers, so likely I talked to this many people, and you're just like, wow, that is a lot. And we kind of realized that pretty much anyone that was doing that tour had way more experience talking to people about going vegan than like even a lot of people at the top of most like vegan advocacy organizations, because they kind of base their stuff on theory and this and that. But it's like, okay, what are the people that are actually going out there? I would take the advice of someone that has done that tour or something like it over so many other people, because you live it and you have so many conversations, you have a chance to change your approach, see what works, see what doesn't work, see which words like spark conversations, which ones don't. It's pretty fascinating.
So what does that mean for you now? Because you still drive around the country talking to people,
mm-hmm.
mostly about t-shirts now, but I'm sure about other things. Like, what does that mean for your kind of like everyday advocacy, like unofficial almost?
Yeah, I think that the biggest lesson I learned is to just shut up most of the time. And this is, you have to like straight up train yourself to do this, I think, for most people. Because as vegans, even if you're like a vegan for like 2 months, you have heard everything at that point. You've heard every objection. You've heard everything that someone's going to bring up. And like four words out of someone's mouth, your head, you're like, okay, I know this statistic, to shut this person down. And I'm just waiting for them to finish saying it so I can let them know how they don't know anything. And you have to train yourself to not do that at all. You have to train yourself to just ask them a question back. Oh, where'd you hear that from? What makes you feel that way? Stuff like that. And then just shut up, because no one likes to be told what to do. No one likes to be told what to think. But if you let someone talk it out, they'll realize that they don't know what they're talking about and they're not as informed. And, you know, I'd have people that were like, well, this is bad, but I only get, you know, humane meat. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm new in town. Where do you get it from? And they'll be like, oh, there's this one market. And so, you know, it's like, I'm not even going, no, humane meat doesn't exist. Like, we'll get into that. But then getting them to realize that's not what they actually do. Like, okay, you went to Chipotle once. You go to Whole Foods every now and then. And get them to talk through it. And you don't even have to say it. You don't even have to say, you know, bullshit, you don't buy that stuff exclusively. You're not going to a restaurant asking them where they get their animal products from, you know. So that, and all of that is just like, just calm yourself down, ask them questions, show empathy for their situation. And so that is now very much how I try and conduct myself with advocacy. And still, I still fail at that, because sometimes you're like, I just need to tell you this thing. But for the most part, I've gotten pretty good at it.
Is there one thing in particular that like you always pounce on. Like, the one, like, for me, it's humane meat.
Uh-huh.
Like, because that's like a fallacy that I leaned on personally. And so, like, anytime somebody is like, oh, yeah, I only buy, like, whatever bullshit term there is.
Yeah.
That's the one that I'm like, no, it's not real. Stop it. It's marketing.
Yeah.
You know, what is there one for you that's like a trigger?
That's honestly, that's probably it, because I think that in my experience, that is our biggest obstacle, is getting people to overcome this idea that there's a right way to do what we'd all view as a wrong thing, at least for those of us living in a situation where we have abundance of alternatives and whatnot. Right. That was like probably one of the most common responses after watching the video. How did you feel about that? Oh, that was horrible. But there's gotta be a better way to do this, right? And so I think that's one that I'm always trying to jump on if I can.
Yeah, and I wonder how much advocacy is going to change now that there's increasing recognition that the humane meat myth is a real issue. Like, I don't know how much that, you know, and granted, like, I've not been part of this nearly as long as many, many other people, but it doesn't seem like that was even 3 years ago when I started looking into this, like, as much a part of the conversation as I'm seeing it become now.
Yeah, I mean, that is also rising, and I feel like at the same time, there's a lot of groups that are shifting their focus to focus on promoting, like, cage-free and things of that nature. You know, there's one group right now that, like, that's basically all they focus on, and that's, like, their big victories now. And so I wonder how those two ideas compete with each other. Not that I think the average person, the general public, is paying attention to what animal rights groups are doing.
Like, they're not. No.
like they know PETA is horrible and kills puppies. That's all they know. Like, oh, is this PETA? Got that all the time when I was on tour. And nobody knows about anyone else except for maybe HSUS. But it's like, if you do have groups that are out there, like, really pushing that, to me, that sends the message that, like, there is an acceptable way. If a vegan's willing to make it, to put all their time and effort into that, to me, that sends a conflicting message. So I hope that the other side of that wins out, that people realize that there isn't a humane way to do any of that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things that, like, often correlates with that type of conversation is the, like, gradual shift to becoming vegan that, you know, seems to be really appealing to a lot of people who are thinking about, becoming vegan or like kind of dipping their toes into it. And I get concerned when, you know, vegans, animal rights activists, like any of us who are having these kinds of conversations and are engaged in these circles, kind of like nothing anybody, I get concerned when it seems like nothing anybody does could possibly be good enough. And we're all human beings. And I just like, and maybe this is just like too weedsy, I don't know, but it just like it makes me upset. Like, I went vegan overnight, and like, I can't believe I did that. Like, yeah. I still think about that, and I'm like, holy shit! Like, I made a real significant change to my life, like on a snap judgment. But I did it because I said I was only going to do it for 30 days, and so like, if somebody told me it's not good enough to say you're only going to do it for 30 days, I would have never done it in the first place.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, just this like the unending fighting and it's not really even a conversation between like all these different groups just seems so counterproductive to me.
Yeah, there's a lot of yelling.
yelling.
And you know, it's hard because you have a lot of people that I genuinely believe want to do good. Even when people talk about, oh, the quote-unquote welfarist groups. I don't know if I really agree with the definition of calling a lot of groups welfarist necessarily, but, you know, the welfarist groups only care about raising money so they can continue their stuff. And, like, I just don't believe that. I believe that they still think that they're doing, like, the most good. And so you have people in, like, all walks of this movement that think they have the best solution and that other people who aren't subscribing to it are being counterproductive to their solution. So it's tricky to like, because every year at like the animal rights conference, there's always calls for like everyone has to get along and focus on the bigger goal. And it's like, oh, it sounds great in theory. And I'm like, I'm all for it. But then you hear someone that's like, I think we should do this. And you're like, no, we shouldn't do that. That's that's horrible. So, yeah, it's really hard. It's really, I don't know what the solutions are to all that stuff.
Oh, man. I don't think anybody does. If somebody did, we wouldn't be having these conversations.
Yeah.
It's just, I think it's important for all of us to remember that non-vegans don't care at all about any of this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, they do not care. And what matters is, like, being a good, kind, compassionate role model, even if you're not really, like, acting as a role model, but just, like, showing, like, being vegan is, like, a totally doable, really compassionate way to live your life. And, like, everything else just seems kind of excessive to me.
Yeah, yeah. No, and I hope what I said didn't come off as, like, being down on, like, the reducitarian focus, because I think that, like, when you acknowledge to someone, like, hey, I didn't do it overnight, and also when you're like, I used to love meat, I still love meat, I just get that taste from this now, right. And, like, telling someone, like, hey, you don't have to do this all right away. And I think those, like, even on the 10 billion tour, we explicitly never advocated for anything less than veganism, while at the same time saying it's okay to start with a day or two a week. That's, like, what the whole pledge was about, was getting people to sort of assign a first step to themselves. And so I think that is, like, a really good step. And that does show people, like, you can tell someone, like, I could never give up bacon. And you're like, okay, well, give up everything but bacon. Or, you know, stuff like that. And people are just like, what?
Right?
Like, I didn't know I could do that.
Yeah.
I'm like, be vegan except bacon. And they're like, but that wouldn't be vegan. I was like, yeah, technically not. But, like, don't worry about the label. Like, worry about what you can do. Think about what your first step is going to be. And for some people, that's like, I'm going to commit to only having vegan breakfast for the rest of the month. Some people, it's like Meatless Monday, and, like, whatever it is, all of those things are good. And so, yeah, I wish that people that think that that's not enough would still recognize that that's better than nothing. And it's a good step that leads a lot of people to take more steps.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of you did a good job of explaining what I have thought about that for a long time, just that, like, it is, taking steps is part of a process.
Yeah.
Like, very few people just, like, all of a sudden change a huge aspect of their life without, like, thinking about it and trying stuff out. Okay, now the cat is just, like, flopped down on the table. She is really something.
It's all about you.
Yep, always. I mean, she is a major reason why I became vegan.
Oh, yeah?
Well, yeah, because I didn't know anything about animals. I never had a pet. I never, interacted with animals in any way. And then I adopted her, and I was like, holy shit, if anybody hurt her in any way, I would kill them. Like, I was just like, I couldn't imagine it. And then I was like, well, wait a second. It's not, like, super fair for me to feel that way about her and not about other animals. Like, why am I okay with somebody abusing a chicken or a cow or a pig just so I can eat something? Because I wouldn't eat her.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't let somebody torture her.
She's adorable.
She's very cute, but so are, like, pigs and stuff. So it was,
pigs are the best.
They are surprisingly cute, though they're less pink as adults than I expected.
Yeah,
which is a bit of a disappointment, I'll be honest. but you know, for me, it was like having a real interaction with an animal and seeing what they're really like. Like, they're, if you step on her paw, she screams.
Yeah.
So same thing's gonna happen if you do that to a farmed animal. So I appreciate her very much. She has no idea what she's done for me.
She's a good teacher.
She is. She is, like, really pawing at my computer, too. Okay, so let's talk about Compassion Company, because that's, like, the next step in your journey. So you started Compassion Company, and what was it at first, and what is it now?
So it just started. I feel like everyone I know that runs a vegan t-shirt company says this, but, like, I was trying to find shirts that I wanted to wear that presented veganism in a specific way, which was not too hippie, not too, like, hardline. Because at that point, like, herbivore clothing was doing really cool stuff, but it, like, wasn't quite exactly the style that I wanted. And then otherwise, all I was finding was, like, white t-shirts that were like, I heart tofu. Or, like, black t-shirts that are like, you can't eat meat with a broken jaw. And you're like, okay, I don't want to wear either of those. I want something that's, like, a little fun, a little playful, but assertive. And so through the band, with the band, I was the guy that was booking the tours, doing the merch, had, you know, a friend that was a screen printer, friends that were artists. So I was like, I can just make these shirts. And it was an idea that I had kicking around in my head for a long time. And then finally I was like, let me just do this. And so, yeah, I just started small with like a couple of designs and, you know, sending out a couple of mail orders every now and then, did like the Boston Veg Fest was a goal I set for myself. And, it was just kind of a thing that I did in addition. My day job was making buttons, actually, like pinback kind of band buttons, basically. And so it started that. And then with the 10 Billion Tour, I would have like 6 months on, 6 months off. And I didn't want to go find another like dead end job for 6 months and then leave it. So I was like, let me map out and try and go to every single Veg Fest I possibly can in the 6 month period. And I did that. And at the end of it, I was like, okay, I didn't lose money. I could keep doing this. And so it has grown from there. And so now I run the company like entirely nomadically, like out of my van. And, you know, my friend does the screen printing out in St. Louis. And another friend of mine will like hold some of my inventory because now I print enough that I can't put it all in the van. And in retrospect, having a business based off of having a physical product, not the best thing to do out of a van. It's not like I'm a blogger. Like people hear about like, oh, you're nomad and you live out of your van and you have these nice like hard like wood panel things and a sink. And I'm just like, no, it's like a coffin in there. Like it's like you can't even sit up. It's just space for like inventory and a place to sleep. And I love it to death. It's like I was telling you earlier, it's my little hermit shell and has everything I need in it. But, so yeah, so I now full time year round go to about 30, 35 Veg Fests a year, coast to coast. And, yeah, you know, the other thing I wanted to do with the company was that I saw some vegan t-shirts that were out there that were printed on like Gildan t-shirts and brands that I just knew without even doing too much research. Like I already knew that they're probably violating some human rights with their production. And to me, that felt counterproductive and counterintuitive to something that was promoting veganism. And so I wanted something that was, you know, sweatshop free and used organic cotton or recycled materials. Because again, that's also something that I feel like is, we talk about vegans all the time, like it's better for the environment, but then we're investing in a product that like is responsible for dumping tons of pesticides out there and all this horrible stuff. So I just wanted something that had a vegan ethic throughout like the whole chain of production. And then also built in that 5% of every sale would get donated to rotating nonprofit that I changed. Originally it was every 2 months. Now it's every 1 month. Sometimes I get lazy and leave it for a couple months if I like the organization.
So who have you donated to recently?
Well, we just did a limited edition, like, turkey shirt, which we kind of put out around Thanksgiving, that went to Woodstock Farm Animal Sanctuary. And then we did a limited edition Christmas shirt that actually went to the 10 Billion Lives tour. We donated to, we do a lot of various sanctuaries. I love donating to Food Empowerment Project is one of my favorite organizations. Yeah. So they often come back around more than any other group that I donate to.
I mean, and they do great work. So yeah, it makes sense that they would get donations.
Yes.
I have a story to tell you about the first time I wore my Compassion Company shirt out. It was the Humane Meat Does Not Exist.
Humane Meat Does Not Exist with the unicorn?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's the one.
Lay
and
on
so
me.
I got out of my car. I was in Center City here in Philly. I get out of my car and this man stops me. And so, you know, I'm a woman. I'm not going to talk to a stranger. And he goes, I really agree with your shirt. And I was like, me too. And then he said, goodbye, and left. And I was like, okay, I achieved something today getting out of my car.
Right on.
That was the first time that I had ever worn any kind of clothing or like outwardly showed anything about my vegan ethic. And I was like, wow, so this is why people wear these shirts, because people pay attention to them. And then they talk to you. It was just like a light bulb for me.
Yeah.
Oh, this actually does something.
That's awesome. That's to me, I think the greatest benefit of the vegan t-shirt is something that can start a conversation. So I try, and I don't know if I'm always successful, but I try and have designs and slogans that would invite a conversation or have people go, what do you mean by that? Or, oh, I didn't realize, because, you know, I have one that says, like, anything you can eat, I can eat vegan. I want people to stop the wear and be like, well, what about, like, steak strips? Or, you know, and then people right. will be like, oh, all that stuff's out there. And I think that that's a crucial part. I know a lot of people just buy them because they're trying to rep their vegan identity, which is a big part of it. You know, you're kind of identifying your people as well. But in my head, they're there to start good conversations.
Mm-hmm. And you have a shirt that, is it Fat Vegans Exist? Is that the phrase on it?
Some vegans are fat, get over it. It was the first button I put out. And then I put out a button that said Fat Happy Vegan.
That's it. Yeah.
And that became a t-shirt with a hippo kind of chilling with sunglasses on. Right. It said Fat Happy and Vegan.
Right. Which is another great message to send, because not every vegan is super thin. Some are, and that's cool too. But like, there's a whole diversity of sizes and shapes in the vegan community, and that gets overlooked a lot.
Absolutely.
And can become like, body size can become part of some people's advocacy.
Yes.
And so I think it's important to make sure that we don't make it all about that.
Yeah. I guess I had seen one or two shirts out there that were like, this is what a fat vegan looks like or something like that. But like, all my stuff is, it's all hand-drawn, like illustration. I work with some incredible artists. And, you know, I wanted something that, like, looked cool and was, like, fun and people love the hippo on it. And I just needed something to kind of represent that demographic, you know, that is me. That is my demographic. And I was kind of, you know, I never wanted to use myself in, like, the product photos. And, you know, I was sick of feeling like I wasn't, like, I had to present, like, oh, it's all fruits and vegetables on the shirts. And, you know, I wanted something for a pretty underrepresented portion of the vegan population. For one reason is because a lot of people are told if you're fat, you shouldn't go out and tell people you're vegan. You have right. to be the fit army to get out there, and no one's going to pay attention to you. You're going to turn people off from veganism. But in my experience, like when I was doing the 10 billion tour, I would talk to fat dudes like myself, and they would be like, oh, I thought that like you had to be this like super athletic guy to be vegan. You look like me, and you've been vegan for like 7 years at this. I could do that. And, you know, it right. just shows people that it's possible, and it's like you can do anything you want as a vegan. So someone wearing that shirt out in public will hopefully connect with other people that maybe a fat person that was considering going vegan but was like, I could never do that. Oh, that guy's doing it. And not only is he saying he's a fat vegan, but he's a happy vegan as well.
Right. And he's got cool sunglasses yes. like that. Yeah, I think like it makes a lot of sense that there would be this kind of weird self-imposed pressure on people who were thinking about becoming vegan. Like, oh, I wouldn't fit in because my body doesn't look like this ideal that I have in my head that all vegans are.
Yeah.
Like that makes total sense, but I don't even know like where that would come from. Like, and like why that would really resonate with people as like a reason to not like it's just interesting. It's like this idea of like veganism being a club, yeah. like an exclusive club that you have to like be invited into almost.
Yeah.
You have to be a certain type of person to do it.
And if we want the world to be vegan, there can't be a club.
No.
Or else everyone's in the club, and who cares then?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's kind of like what you were saying about not wanting the designs to be too, like, hippie-ish, because I think, like, that's another piece of this whole, like, of making veganism palatable, not just palatable, but, like, accessible to everybody is to, you know, take it out of that kind of stereotype of, like, hippies
yeah.
and like regular people who work in health policy and believe in traditional Western medicine can also be vegan. People who, you know, don't believe in homeopathy can be vegan and vaccinate their kids and themselves can be vegan. And all of those things are not synonymous with being vegan. So like, if you believe all that stuff, you can be the vaccinations, as anybody who's been listening to the show for a while knows, that's a real trigger point for me. But I think, like, just like with the kind of science side of things, the whole, like, body shape, body image part is really important for us to include.
Yeah, and I think that a certain portion of the vegan population has done a real good job at pushing away fat folks from the movement. because there is such a big health component. And like on some level, like it obviously should be part of the conversation, because like whole plant-based foods are likely to be more healthy for you. So I get why it gets brought into it. But when it becomes like the focal point, you know, I think it's cool when it's like, hey, we should stop killing animals. And by the way, it's likely it will probably reduce your rate of heart disease or something. That's a nice side effect, nice bonus, right. You know. But it shouldn't be like the only thing, and it shouldn't be like I've talked to people at the table who are fat and they're like, I can't wear that shirt, you know, because of all this stuff. Or I went vegan and I didn't lose weight and I feel ashamed of that. And I remember when I gave the talk I mentioned at the library, like a long, long time ago, I weighed less than I do now, but I felt like I had to tell, like address the fact that I was fat to the crowd.
Interesting.
And say like, you know, I talked about the ethics, and then I talked about the environment, and then I talked about like the nutrition aspect of it. And during that, I was like, you know, let me talk about the elephant in the room. I realized I'm not this super fit guy, and I did lose some weight, but I felt like I had to sort of say like, I've lost some weight. I'm still working on it. Like I'm an acceptable right. fat person, 'cause I'm trying to lose weight.
Yeah.
And it's just like such a shitty pressure to like put on people, and some of it self-imposed, and obviously some of it due to just the society and the you know, the atmosphere that we're in.
Yeah, I mean, we all internalize, even super thin people internalize the desire to be thinner than they are now. And, you know, we all have kind of a disordered idea about what's acceptable for a body to look like.
Yeah.
And, you know, in a community of people who is very concerned with how we look to the outside world, It makes a lot of sense that would come up. And plus, like, the health aspects. Again, as a person who works in public health, food and weight and nutrition and all of that stuff is, like, always at the forefront. And so, you know, I am personally very conscious of how that mixes in with advocacy. Because for me as well, like, if you... the health benefits are not the point.
Yeah.
Right. It's an ethical decision for me. And so I always, whenever I'm talking to people, I downplay the health stuff like entirely.
Yeah.
I just don't talk about it. I don't think it's the important part.
But. Yeah. I almost never bring it up unless someone else starts to bring it up.
Yeah. And then I talk about how great my blood work is.
Yeah.
And like, there we go. That's all you need to know.
I feel like a lot of vegans feel this pressure to prove that veganism, like a plant-based diet, is like superior. And I tell people all the time, like other vegans trying to figure out how to talk to people, you just have to say it's as good as, like, right. You don't have to prove that it's better, because then someone else could be like, well, this strongest person in the world also is like vegan, but they eat like chicken every now and then or something. It's like, you know, there's going to be someone that's going to find a way to disprove, oh, we found this animal product that's okay to include. It's like, no, all you have to do is be like, you can be as healthy, thrive just as much on a plant-based diet, on a vegan diet, which is why I think it's important to have vegan bodybuilders. I think it's important to show it's possible, but then you also want to have like average looking people to show that that's possible, and you can do whatever you want to do just without harming animals.
Yeah. Absolutely. So let's talk about Bearded Vegans now.
All right.
Another vegan podcast.
Yay.
That's fun to listen to. So tell me about how that started.
So the Bearded Vegans is a podcast that is hosted by myself and my good friend Paul Steller, Professor Paul.
Professor Paul.
A recent update in his life. He is now a professor. He actually came to me and asked if I wanted to either be a co-host or be like a frequent guest. And I don't know what he was thinking, because he is the busiest person alive. But, you know, I love podcasts. It's like part of my punk retirement is I stop listening to music and I start listening to podcasts.
Yep.
And I like wanted to do one, but I don't know how. I mean, obviously you're having conversations, but like I don't know how anyone that hosts a solo podcast does it, because like I rely on him so much for like banter.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I was like, I can't do this by myself, but you want to do it, so let's do it. And we just kind of sat down and we're like, name, well, we both got beards, so okay, done. And like, you know, intro song, well, we like that Dead Prez song that talks about not eating meat, done. And we didn't know what we wanted to do exactly or what the format was, but we were just like, okay, let's talk about issues and have some interviews. And it, eventually what it kind of evolved into was us kind of often using like an article that's come out. It's kind of going around the vegan, you know, Facebook pages and whatnot, and that brings up some kind of ethical quagmire, some gray area, and that's kind of become our vegan bread and butter of the thing, is just diving into those gray areas and having conversation and never coming up with a solution or an answer, like, ever. But it's fun to have that conversation. And then we used to have more interviews, and part of that is just wanting to, we have less now. Part of that's because we just want things to correlate with the discussion, and part of it is just motivation and time and effort
and again, scheduling.
Again, I don't know how you do it. But yeah, so it's fun. We just hit episode 60, and we're taking a break for December to recuperate, and then we'll be back in 2017 with new episodes, and they come out weekly on Wednesdays. So
cool.
It's a fun time.
What has been your favorite conversation that you've had on the podcast?
Ooh.
You can do top two if it's hard to decide.
I can think of favorite interviews I've done right away.
All right. What are some of those?
So I'll use that as a stalling tactic. Doomy Bay, which was, I think, his episode 10. He runs Redefine Your Mind, which is both a vegan-like activewear company, but also a nonprofit that reaches out to incarcerated youth. And he's just like a delightful person to talk to. I just love the way he speaks about the things he speaks about. He actually went vegan sort of unknowingly, but he went vegan while he was incarcerated. And so it's just like a incredibly interesting story. And he has a really great sort of outlook on life that I love. And I think probably my other favorite interview we did with Ramah Ganesan about nonviolent communication. And she wrote an article like, is nonviolent communication effective vegan advocacy? Mm-hmm. So I was not really familiar with nonviolent communication, NVC, prior to that. So that kind of forced me to really look into it, as well as Paul. And we're both big fans of that theory of communication, even if we're not always the most successful at implementing it. But, you know, because it's all about not judging people.
And that's hard because we're all humans and we like to judge people.
And, you know, and we dive into that in the interview. I asked her, like, how do we not judge someone that is doing something that I think we can, like, all pretty much say is bad? Like, it's bad to cause harm. And so, you know, it was really just cool to talk about what that means for vegan advocacy, because, you know, like we were talking about earlier, the thing, you can't judge people. You got to realize that you were probably doing what they did. What they're doing now, you probably did it a couple years ago. As far as discussion topics, we had one actually that was about whether or not celebrities are good for veganism, and we ended up talking for like 2 hours on it, so we split it up into like a two-parter. So I think that one was a lot of fun. And I'll say for number two, we did one about whether or not we should be using graphic images for advocacy, which I thought was a really interesting interview or discussion between me and Paul. I like that often I feel like I know how I feel about something, but my mind will change over the course of a conversation, or Paul will say something like, oh, you're totally right. And like, we're generally on the same page about most things, but we are able to have a good back and forth and hopefully tease out most of the different sides of certain topics.
Mm-hmm. Where did you end up on the graphic images issue?
I think that they are necessary in certain contexts. But, I mean, we talked about, like, whether it's, like, disrespectful to the animal to even show that. Like, we wouldn't show footage of the worst thing that's ever happened to a human for like an anti-rape campaign or something,
right?
Or like whatever it might be, that would be disrespectful. So like, well, why is it okay for us to show the worst thing that's happened to this animal? And I think that it's hard to imagine being able to convince someone that what's happening is happening without showing it to them, though. You know, it's like you could make a cartoon, you could graphically describe it, but you'll be accused of elaborating or embellishing or just straight up lying. Even when you show people videos, oh, it's selectively edited, and that's just the worst cases. And you know, you're like, no, these are standard legal practices on all farms, big or small. So it's not my type. I'm not the vegan that's like posting horrible images all day long on their Facebook, but I think that there is a place for it. But I think a lot more is accomplished with like good conversations, showing empathy, feeding people good vegan food. Mm-hmm. I find those to be very effective.
Yeah, I know for me, like, the fact that I can't bear to look at graphic images was a real indicator for me that I shouldn't be participating in something. Like, if I couldn't make myself look at it,
yeah,
then I knew it was wrong. And it was really bad.
Yeah.
And I needed to change something.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I avoid graphic images as much as I can personally, but I also understand that for a lot of people, they're really powerful and helpful,
yeah,
in exactly what you're saying, like convincing themselves that this is real and yeah, it's wrong.
Especially for that first time that someone sees it. Like some people that came and watched the video on the tour, you know, most people have seen something like that before, but we caught a ton of people that had never really had their eyes open to that. And that moment is so powerful. So I think that there is value in that footage.
Yeah. Well, on that note, where can people find the podcast and where can they find Compassion Company?
The podcast can be found on any of the normal platforms, iTunes, Stitcher, or you can just go to our podcast network's webpage, which is thecommentist.com, so commentist.com. We don't have a Facebook or anything because we don't really want to, but I feel like we might start to have some more social media in the new year. No promises. And the business, compassionco.com, we have all the social media, but Instagram is the most fun one that I'm on. So
that's how everybody knows where you are at any given moment.
Yes.
I see you in Philadelphia often, and I'm like, why aren't I eating a cheesesteak at Blackbird with you? Because I want to be there right now.
Well, now I got to hit you up.
Yeah,
oh, yeah,
definitely.
The podcast does have an Instagram, and that's where like all the food goes. So, which is funny because like we talk about food at like the first 5-10 minutes of every episode, and then not. But all the Instagram is just all food.
Well, and you do so much traveling that there's always like a new place that you've been.
Yeah, I was posting food pictures on the Compassion Company Instagram, but then I would scroll through and be like, people would come to this Instagram and not know that it's a clothing company. Like they just see all the food. So we started the podcast and I was like, Paul, I'm going to make us an Instagram so I have somewhere to dump all my food photos. And he like for out of like every like 50, he'll post like one picture and I'll be like, why am I getting notified? Oh, Paul posted something. This is so weird.
I guess I follow both accounts then, because in my mind, it's all food all the time. So it must be the bearded vegans.
I mean, isn't it really?
It really is. It really is. Well, thank you so much for coming by. I appreciate you carving out some time in your Philadelphia trip for me.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thanks. Tegan Goes Vegan is produced by Tegan and Nathan Karuna, with music by Amanda D'Amato. To learn more about the show, you can go to tegangoesvegan.com, on Facebook at facebook.com/tegangoesveganpodcast, and on Twitter at tegangoesvegan. You can also sign up for emails at tegangoesvegan.com/contact. If you enjoyed the show, please be sure to rate and review it on iTunes at bit.ly/veganpodcast. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon with more great vegan content.